Blog Talk Radio.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram. Lots of cool pictures of the guests, giveaways. That's Saturdays with Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. I also want to thank you for tuning in when I was like on a hiatus. I saw you guys still downloading. That's great. And thank you, thank you, and thank you. Well, this morning, we have a busy man. This man, I don't know when he's sleeping or drinking water or extra. I mean, he's just like writing, writing, video. This guy is amazing. He's trying to put out like 4 novels a year. He has comics. He writes for young adults. Now he's going into his second book for adults. He is a camp counselor in the summer, well, before COVID, I'm sure. We're not doing that right now. His name is Antoine Bondelet. Am I pronouncing your last name correct?
Yeah, you have it. It's funny because each of my names are from a different place. So, like, Antoine is French, which you usually say, like, Antoine. And then William, that's just English. That's my middle name. And then my last name is Bondelet, which is Yoruba, which, for people who don't know, that's Nigerian, West African. Which means follow me home in their language, which is Bamidele. So, like, I have a world name.
Yes, I'm very familiar with Yoruba. So when I was reading your book, that's what came to my mind, and I was thinking about a whole bunch of stuff. I don't want to say, but yes, that's great. And a lot of people aren't familiar, you know, with a lot of languages that are spoken all throughout Africa, and
Africa
even in certain parts of Africa.
Extremely diverse.
Yeah, it's very diverse, and also even like Spanish, you know, and like the connection of Angola and Cuba and all these things, you know, people aren't aware about the connections. But we're here to talk about you and your busy schedule. And are you trying to kill yourself? I mean,
that it's funny you say that too, because I actually just did a post on my YouTube channel and just social media in general of like my schedule, because I'll have a lot of subscribers or just people going like, oh, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And I'm like, well, I have lots and lots of things to do. But the thing about that, about doing lots of things, is that you just have to compartmentalize all of that stuff and do them in part and sections, rather than thinking about the whole. That's definitely the best way to tackle something huge like that.
So now, this thing about being a writer, why are you a writer? Why not a doctor or, you know, a salesman? Or, I mean, there's so many things in life you could be. Like, what made you think that you could be a writer?
Well, it's been something that's always come into my life and shown itself, but I never actually listened to those things that would pop up in my life. So back when I was 6, 7, I was writing stories, or my mom was encouraging me and my brother to be creative and reading stories and then also creating them. So we would, you know, draw them and then put pictures next to them, like in a comic book style or like a picture book, children's book kind of style. And then she would staple it, and then sometimes we would get it laminated at like Smart and Final and feel like really like legit about it. And so I did that all throughout my childhood, but didn't really realize that that's like something I could like do as an adult. Then in high school, I accidentally got put into a film class, like a film department class. And then I kind of lost my way because, you know, I live in Los Angeles. Like, that's like, that is the industry here. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll do this. Like, it's easier because you just film it. And then, you know, you don't have to, like, you know, create and think about some of the things that I was doing, like visual art I was doing and stuff like that. I was like, oh, instead of drawing pictures, mm-hmm. I can just like film people, and then that takes away that stuff. And then I went to a film program right out of high school where I won their screenwriting award. So again, that another thing of writing coming back to say, hey, this is probably what you should be doing, and me kind of going like, I want to do this director thing, or I want to be an editor kind of a thing. And it was not until me getting out of my 20s and entering my 30s that I started doing the novel stuff, and that stemmed from me watching, I think it was one of the later seasons of Game of Thrones, and I was like, I wonder if there's like a Game of Thrones for Africa, and then start looking into some of like, you know, the more notable African and African-American authors, Caribbean, African, Afro, and seeing all these authors that are out there, but there wasn't a story that I quite aligned with. You know, you have your N.K. Jemisins, your Marlon James, and your Nnedi Okafors, which they all write brilliant stuff, but it just wasn't the kind of fantasy, because most of their stuff was like fantasy realism, and I was always into like the more, not traditional fantasy, but like more magical, in line with like, you know, your Harry Potters or Percy Jacksons or more young adult kind of stuff.
Right.
And I was like, well, instead of just like sitting on my butt and kind of waiting for it, I should write it myself. It's funny when I start writing it myself, I start becoming more aware of other other books that have come out, like Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi was probably one of those books that I was waiting for. And she made that like the same year I think I came out with my first novel, The Kishi.
So yeah, so like other people are also thinking on the same. It's weird when you start walking down a path in your life, like people will say, well, you're walking in your truth, or you're walking like what you're supposed to be doing. It's like amazing how you start noticing these other things that are like, oh my God, I never saw that before. Well, wait, how did they see? Because until you walk the path, you won't see it. You know what I mean? Like until you start going about doing what is really what you're supposed to be doing, you actually don't see things. And there's actually, I remember I took this poli sci class, and we were talking about what people read, like, you know, you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, you're thinking, what does this have to do with comics and writing? But this is what it had to do with. People read things that support their ideology. They rarely read stuff that goes against their ideology. Even people say, oh, I'm so open. They really read stuff. But what happens is then with the case like this, when you start changing your path a little and going kind of like maybe like I'm going to stretch myself, then you're like, oh my God, look at there, look at there, look at there, you know? So that's, now how long does it take you? Because now you're writing for young adults. You have a TJ Young and the Orishas.
Yes.
Tell the audience about that. What are Orishas for people who don't know?
So it is, it's one of the West African traditions that kind of survived the transatlantic slave route. In that it was, if you see it now in the Caribbean and South America, it's very integrated with Catholicism. So you'll see like Orishas next to saints. They're essentially, I try to equate them usually for people who are trying to understand it. Like if you think about Greek mythology and how there's like, you know, a pantheon of gods, and they all maintain one aspect. So Orishas are like that, but they're not, it doesn't completely translate to gods. They're more akin to angels in a way. And there's like, you know, different tiers of them. So like there's like the high, the lower ones. So for instance, like the TJ book, the first one is based around the gatekeeper, which is known as Eshu or Elegua, depending on, you know, what region you're from. And he is a trickster god, the god of crossroads and that sort of a thing. And they all have their own different things, like Oya is the goddess of storms and winds, and Shango is a masculine type of
war
a god. Was like, I'm talking about the more famous ones. Yamaya is the maiden of the ocean and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and water and stuff like that. And there's several water ones. There's like a Oshun, Yamaya, Olokun. Like there's a bunch. Like it goes really deep. There's actually, if you speak to or read some of the books made by Babalawos, which are priests, they say that there can be like 400 plus Orisha, you know, because it's really just about, you know, what in life is there and, you know, someone's maintaining that, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's a deep history to it. So you're trying to bring it to a modern twist and trying to connect young people to learn about that.
Exactly. So if you're familiar with Percy Jackson, that will probably be the main target of the book. Percy Jackson, of course, is about the boy, Percy Jackson, who is interacting with Greek gods, but in a modern setting. It's very similar in that. TJ is not an actual, you know, son of an Orisha or anything like that, but he does interact with them and goes on his little young adult adventures via the Orisha pantheon.
Now, do you like this young adult writing? Because now I see you going into more adult, and that's where I kind of became aware of you about the
Epsilon stories. Yeah, that's the origin.
So what do you like better? Do you like, because you have another adult thing coming out, which we'll talk about later, but which one do you like more, writing for the young people or in like comics and short things, or these longer adult novels? Which
They both have their pros and cons, but... And sometimes I always wonder this when I ask myself this question as well, is do I, and the answer to that right now would be I do like the young adult material, but I don't know if I like it because it's young adult or because it's contemporary. Because with my adult stuff, it's more pre-colonial African mythology type stuff. Like everything I'm doing in that series has to do with African myth and lore that is more or less pre-colonial, or at least kind of like that in between while, you know, the transport was happening. But then, yeah, when writing the TJ series or any of my young adult stuff, I find the words come easier because I can, like, reference stuff from modern day. I can relate to the character a little bit more because it's a modern character. I don't know. I can't relate as closely as someone who lived, you know, hundreds or thousands of years ago versus someone who is growing up next to me right now that I can just go out to the park and see, oh yeah, that kid's TJ or that kid's Manuela or that kid's Ayodeji, you know, like you can see that visually a lot easier, you know, in that regard.
So now where do you write? Do you write at home? Do you go outside and write? Do you go to the library? What's your setting for writing stuff?
So before the coronavirus, I used to walk about an hour to a cafe that LA locals will know very well called Simply Wholesome. And I would go there at the cafe and write. And it's a Black-owned restaurant / market. And I would go there and write. But, you know, obviously with the virus, I can't really do that. But, yeah, most times I'm here at home writing. Or, you know, if I need a change of pace, then I might go out to my porch or something like that. But usually, yes, indoors. Oh, and for your second question about the research, yes, I do lots and lots of research. Like for the first year when I decided to do this, I spent just devouring history books. So I did a world history book on Africa. Then I started getting more nuanced by like looking into Nubia, looking into old Angola. So you have like Jinga of Angola, who is one of the queens who was very resistant to Portuguese ruling. Then you have mythology I was looking into, so Yoruba, the Orisha, all of that, you know, came trickling. But it all stemmed from world history first, like looking at it in a broad sense, and then getting more detailed and picking up things from here and there.
So let's talk about this COVID. Like you just said, before COVID and after COVID, it's like, is there going to be an after? So where were you when you found out you had to get locked down?
Well, that's the funny thing. So I actually feel like I'm super unaffected because most of my work is from home. Outside of writing, I'm a video editor for a lot of YouTube channels, and we work remote anyway. So I was like, oh, there's not really much change for me in terms of my, like, workload or the only thing that might have changed is the things I do outdoors. Like, you know, I do recreational sports. I do softball on the weekends and during the week. Like, you know, that's limited now. Seeing, you know, family members or friends, like, that's limited, of course. But in terms of, like, my work itself, it feels, like, the same. And I'm also kind of an introvert, so it doesn't – I haven't really been super affected by it.
Okay, so this is like, oh, whatever, you know. But now
– No, it's funny. We were saying that, introverts, at the beginning. We were like, sorry, extroverts, you're going to have to learn how to be us for a little bit by a while.
It's funny. I think I'm kind of half and half. Like, because people don't realize, like, I am outgoing, but then I'm shy. And I have like this nerdy thing, and then I have this like other outgoing thing, you know. So people can be both, you know. And for me, I didn't work at home, you know. My day job, if you want to say, I was working out, and you know, I was like, oh damn, I can't go to the movies. Like, I'm a movieholic. I, you know, can't go out to restaurants, you know, my friends, you can't go out to events, you know, like that was a thing, you know, so you don't have to be in the house, you know, so in some ways it was cool, but then in other ways it wasn't. And now we have all the protests dealing with, you know, racism, systemic racism in America, dealing with police brutality. That, how has that affected you mentally? Does it affect you physically? Are there places that you can't go now because the protests are happening? Have you been in protests?
I will be because, well, I was actually, funny, these are both tied, because I was actually on a quarantine up until this Monday because I had gone to meet with my mother who lives in Palmdale, which is like a town north of Los Angeles. And I had developed a cough. So just, I mean, I wasn't sure if I had anything. I don't think I actually even did. But just, you know, just be safe and precautious. And because I could, I, you know, took a 2-week self-quarantine as all that stuff was happening. But then there's a demonstration that's happening on this Saturday, not this today, but next Saturday at Leimert Park, which again is another, if Los Angeles people who are listening, you guys know what Leimert Park is and what that's about. There's this demonstration going on that I'm going to. But yeah, it's funny all the stuff that's happening because there's a story I like to tell about this and the idea that racism has gone away or this sort of divide between communities and police forces, or just the idea of a black man being lynched in modern society. When I was young, like maybe 6 or 7, my dad has showed me a picture of a man hung from a tree, and on his feet were, I forget the shoes, but they were either Magic Johnson's shoes or Michael Jordan's shoes. And just the imagery of that picture.
Your dad showed you this picture when you were little?
Oh, of course. Of course. Like, he wanted me to know what the world really is and what it still is. Because, you know,
wow.
At that time, people were kind of almost in that kind of idea of, oh, we're post-racism. You know, it wasn't quite Obama yet. I wasn't, you know, that didn't happen until some years later. But
yeah.
But just the idea that, you know, it's over, you know, that stuff like that doesn't happen anymore. Like, you know, get over it. It's in the past. So that picture always stuck out to me because, you know, it's a great photo. It's a semi-famous one, too. I mean, obviously stuff like that gets tried. The American media system tries to push that down. But it's a powerful image of a man, a very modern man wearing some Nike,
mm-hmm.
you know, some Nike, Michael Jordans, whatever they were, Air Jordans.
Right.
And being hung
yeah.
from a tree. Like, I think that was like the perfect representation of, nah, this stuff is still happening, like right now.
So did he talk to you as a young man saying, like, when you go out and if you get stopped by the police, did he have that conversation with you?
Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, I remember I had a huge one, especially when the Trayvon Martin stuff happened. I went out to Georgia to visit my aunt. And she was just very, like, whenever I went out, I think she needed to go to the store or something like that. And she told me specifically, like, she had a flash of, like, Trayvon Martin and stuff like that. And the thing about that is that she lives in, she's a pediatrician. Her husband is a surgeon, so they're really well off. They live in, like, this really nice neighborhood. So she had that thought, you know, like, me as a young black male, I was 19 at the time, something like that, 1920. And she was very aware of me just walking down the street, you know, and like, what if the wrong person sees me and goes like, oh, are you supposed to be here? And then me say like, yeah, you know, my aunt lives around the corner, and like, oh, I don't believe that, you know, it's one of those situations. And, you know, I'm sure she was very traumatized by that. Yeah, I was very aware, like all my family were in my ear about that.
So what do you think how has that affected your work? You know what I mean? In terms of getting further along and being a writer, being able to be published, you self-publish a lot. I mean, how has that affected your work? Has racism creeped in there, or do you see no problem?
So one of my, mantras, I guess I would say, for my writing is because one of the reasons, like I was mentioning before, not having a story that really was something that I enjoyed is because most of black fiction that I was kind of getting into was always about struggle, struggle, struggle. And this actually I talked about with a with another podcast called Melanin Chat, I believe they are. And they thought about that too, is that a lot of Black fiction, at least in traditional publishing, doesn't really accept it unless there's a trauma or a struggle there. And I always wanted to think that it's not always about struggle. It's not always post-colonial slavery. Like, you know, some people will say like, oh, you know, history or Black people aren't really recognized until slavery, but we were doing a bunch of stuff before that point. We was already eating.
Yeah.
We was already, you know, doing our thing. The idea that, you know, we were already queens and queens in our own place. We were doing, you know, we were doing it. So I'm trying to depict that versus the, I feel like the trauma has been depicted so very well. American media loves to say that, you know, they love to give awards to, you know, the slave movies and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to put a different narrative of just, you know, Black people doing fantasy stuff and being cool, being swashbucklers, just going around, you know, in action adventures, or, you know, being awesome. You know what I mean? Like I wanted, that's my two cents to put into the publishing world, that kind of narrative.
Yeah, no, I agree. And because, like, for example, like Octavia Butler was one of my, you know, wonderful favorite artists. Yes. And, but I also read Ursula Gwynn. I don't know if you read that. I've read Neil Gaiman. I'm, like I said, I'm a nerd. You know, Sandman comics. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
There's different things like you read. And like when I read her books or Tanana Reeve do, it's like, it's a different feeling. When I'm reading your book, the names, you know what I mean? It's like, I know that's a Black person. I see their skin color, the hair texture. It's a difference. It's just like this, when I'm reading a novel that, you know, I know are white characters, I feel like they're kind of outside of me a little bit. Like, they're over here, and I can still enjoy the story. You know what I mean? If it's well written, I can still enjoy the story. But it's kind of just like, just a little like over there to the left or right or whatever. But when I'm reading your story or someone that I know they're Black people, they're African people, and they're just, like you said, they're doing normal things. Because me as a Black woman, I don't wake up every morning like I'm Black. I don't look in the mirror like I'm Black. I just walk out the door, I get dressed, I go and do whatever I got to do, I go to the supermarket. The only time that I think that it comes up that I'm Black is like somebody presents something negative, like a negative conflict in the universe, you know what I'm saying? And then it's like, damn, here we go again. You know what I mean? So it's nice to read a story where we're lovers, we're fighters, you know, we're wizards, you know, we're chiefs. We're, you know, the little army. We're the funny people. Like, we're all these different people. We're human.
And that's
you know what I mean?
Too.
We're all these different things.
The anti-monolith thing is that, and that's the thing, too, I love about my books, too, is that I don't make it just about, there's no one person just in any human society. There's always going to be differences between the people. It's not just like, oh, like, that's Black, so that it's just this one thing, you know, like, no, it's multiple things, it's multifaceted.
Yeah, now, I read the Kishi story, and, you know, as a woman, when he first opened with the lady getting chomped, I was like, ooh, okay, my little feminist, like, tingling thing was going on, I was like, can I read the rest of this, you know? But I read the rest of it, and I enjoyed it because you fleshed out the characters. You know what I mean? You gave their backstories. Now, the main, you know, protagonist is a man. Now, the second story you have coming out by Sea and Sky, I'm saying that correctly,
yeah,
right? And
it has a
woman. So I was like, oh, all right, props. Okay, I think, okay. You know? It kind of was like a balance of it. But now, answer me this. You're a man. How do you write for a woman who's the main character? How do you do that? Do you talk to your
girlfriend?
I mean, like.
You hire a female narrator. I'm not a narrator. I'm editor. And you get a bunch of beta readers who are female. Because that's a big thing. I remember when I was growing up, my friends' moms will always say that about, like, oh, yeah, whenever I read a book by a male author, I can tell it's written by a male or whatever, because usually it's because of the prose and the description. Because there's a thing called male gaze, you know, that oftentimes you'll see from the POV of a man that a woman doesn't have the same POV on with, you know, certain things. But it's also just making sure that, you know, we're all human. We all have like a similar desires, you know, just make that person a person with the nuance of, you know, of being a woman. And it's also kind of easier too, because it's not based on a modern society, and it's there's magic involved. So there's like the Great Equalizer is like magic itself. I mean, the character herself, she doesn't have magic, but she lives in a world of magic. So that helped a little bit too.
Because when I was growing up and I was reading these stories that I was different authors, you know, that I was reading, even like Tolkien and things like that, there was like the guys were the main character. I mean, the women were there, but the guys were the main. It was a guy's thing. But then the way I was raised, you know, I related to like the guy. Like I wanted to be like, you know, the ninja. You know, I wanted to be, you know, these people that could go on these great adventures and do all these things. So when I was younger, I wanted to be a spy. Like I wanted to work for like the CIA and all this stuff. So that's a whole other story. But anyway. But so it's good to find fantasy novels with a female as the lead character and everything going on around her. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you taking that time to create that. It's important for young women to see themselves in these different environments, because sometimes it can be an escape from what's going on in their daily lives, or it can be a catalyst to make them do something else in their modern day life. You understand? And I think that also may help you. Do you get feedback about the young novels with TJ? Does that help the young kids and things like that? Have you got feedback from that?
TJ isn't out until next year, so I haven't really gotten like a public feedback. I've only given out that story to like some of my critique partners and editors so far.
Yeah.
But I would. Yeah, that one's gonna be fun. I can't wait to see how that one pans out, because that one I feel like is so much more relatable because it's contemporary. But going back to the stuff about having this black female, specifically a black female, not only in the story, but you know, smack in the front of the cover, a huge thing that I went through, and it's something that, you know, we still have to combat, is that while I was making that cover and sharing it out to like author groups and like getting feedback and stuff like that, you know, I got a lot of like, is that a man? It would be so much better if she had long flowing hair that goes through the wind, and you know, that sort of thing. And I'm like, this is the reason I'm making these stories. This is the reason I'm doing it as I'm doing it. You know, specifically because I very intentionally made sure she had a natural haircut, and then also had an issue with my artist a bit, because he kept like giving me artwork that wasn't quite aligned with African features or hair that was quite the right texture. Like at first he like kind of gave her like short hair, but then like it was like a perm kind of going on. I was like, no, give her curls, give her naps. Like that is her natural state.
That's her hair.
Like show that beauty. Going through that process and seeing like that kind of feedback, I was like, oh man, yeah, this is the reason why these stories need to be out there. Y'all got to understand that there's all kinds of women out there, and there's all different kinds of beauty that do not align with Western society.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. It's so hard for people. They don't see it. They can't see it. And, like, that's a good example of this artwork. If you're telling the guy, you know, to make this type of woman, and somehow they can't even, like, it's like it's some kind of invisible resistance to doing that, because that's not what they perceive as beautiful, you know? Well, I want to thank you for coming on today. We are running out of time. I am going to give away some of your books and also let the audience know that this the book by Sea and Sky is part of a series, and this man is trying to put out like what, mini novels in between and two other novels this year. Is that correct?
There's a lot of in between, and yeah, stuff like novellas that are attached to the novels, and yeah, there's a lot.
All right, well, check them out.
But you can find
he
out
has
all
a website.
That, huh? Was that a segue? I am so sorry. If that was a segue, I could actually segue, because I can say that you can find out all this information on my website, which is my first and last name, AntoineBandelay.com. And that will show you the whole timeline and everything that is available.
And where are you? Are you on Twitter? Are you on Facebook,
I'm
Instagram?
Also, I'm also on social media, I think, except for maybe like Tumblr and some, but like all the major ones, like Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook.
Excellent. And it's under your name.
Everything's tied to my name. If you just put my name in Google, you'll find all that relevant information.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Antoine, the French.
Yeah, yeah.
It
depends on where
today.
You are. Because if a French person comes to me, they say Antoine. But then, like, in America, we have a harsher A, so it's Antoine. So Antoine here.
Antoine. Okay, Antoine.
Yeah, yeah, just like that. Oh, my God.
All right. Well, you have a wonderful day. And many blessings to you and your family. And stay safe and healthy, okay?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me on.
All right, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. I appreciate you guys supporting the show. Again, I'm going to be giving away some of his books, so you want to follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, or you can check me out on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. Just be looking for the hints and how you can win, and email me the answers, and then I'll be able to mail you out some prizes. All right, I will talk to you later. Middle of next week, I'll be talking with Curtis from The Chi. He's the evil drug dealer guy who, you know, is trying to take over the city. So check him out. It's a special edition on Wednesday, the 17th at 4 p.m. Eastern. All right, I'll talk to you later.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
To some, a baby's babbling doesn't mean much, but it does. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at autismspeaks.org, brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.